you know, which really is an interesting story, because it brings in that the emotional factor and how certain powerful emotions serve to lock something into consciousness, which happened both, you know, within one lifetime as well as across past lifetimes.
The Roman period, the early Christian period, was really a very vintage period for the production of karma.
Uh-huh.
A lot of the readings go back to that, and one, the point you make is, I think, very, very good one. Because one reading that I recalled as you were giving yours went back a series of three different incarnations, each of which had some physical manifestation of an incident that dated to the Roman era.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, this young woman was want to attend the sports arena, where they used to throw Christians and lions together, and enjoyed the spectacle very much, and had caught the eye of whichever ruling psychopath at the time, and he would ask her opinion as to whether it's thumbs up or thumbs down for any particular gladiator. And apparently she invariably gave the old thumbs down bit. But the point is that her karma was very excessive because of the active enjoyment,
mm-hmm.
the overbalance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she went through one existence of blindness because of the symbolism of the enjoyment through the sight of the spectacle, and another of, I think, some sort of blood dysgrasia or something, and a third one with a mental retardation handicap. So it's taken piece by piece. But also, apparently, if one does not fulfill his karma joyfully, or in a sense does not come to terms with his handicap or whatever it is, then that tends to prolong the condition.
It has to be worked out. And
it has to be worked out actively.
Usually, and here's one of the things that I think that we've learned too, is that, which others have pointed out too, is that people think of karma as being the action-reaction principle, which it is. You do something and essentially you get it back, the boomerang principle, or symbolic, whatever. But as we learn to go into consciousness and bring enlightened awareness into consciousness and work through these things with a positive attitude and with an eye to learning the lesson joyfully and with an understanding, then it seems like the problem solving is internalized. Instead of having to be worked out externally, it's brought into consciousness, and it's not so painful. It becomes less and less painful. So instead of going through over and over, you know, murdering, being murdered, murdering, being murdered, you then work out the murder factors within until you get through them completely. And this internalizing these things, so we can work them out on the stage of consciousness rather than working them out on the stage of either external behavior or the stage of the body. That's like, it's either behavior or then the body, and then finally totally within consciousness until we're out of it. And so we go around and around the wheel, bringing it, like Josh was saying at the beginning, that there's a progression from the subtle to the gross, and this is like a progression in the other direction, getting it to the subtler and subtler levels until it's finally, till the last essences or seeds of the process that was set in motion there have been finally consumed.
This could then also be, in this case I'd be advocating that it would be quicker
mm-hmm.
than living it out each incarnation.
Yes, absolutely.
On the other hand, I always like the idea of, maybe it is because of an artistic background, to work on a problem. Let's say it was rage to do with
uh-huh.
murderous rage. Okay, now the person probably has something else too, something to do with not being able to show love or something,
uh-huh.
let's say, you know,
uh-huh.
a totally different, but not yeah. unrelated.
Uh-huh.
And then let that sit for a while, work
mm-hmm.
out a little bit of that karma, get them to a stage, a certain level. I find that people get to a certain level of cure or better or mm-hmm. whatever, however mm-hmm. you want to describe it, adjustment. First of all, acceptance that they've got a problem in that area.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then let that rest. That's how I do therapy. And then maybe something else will come up in their everyday life or some other problem, or their boss fired them all of a sudden. And then you have to cope with that. And you fit it in as a picture, and the person evolves that way, a bit here, a bit there,
right.
instead of zoning in too much. I mean, you might zone in and then let it rest a while and let it grow. And it might even take another 20 years. Maybe they won't hit that problem again until 2 years from now.
It might be. Then that would be part of the karma. These are things that are under higher law. This is not it's not something that we decide or do as personalities. We can do our part in cooperating, but there's a higher law, and we can knock ourselves out trying to heal ourselves or heal somebody else.
Yes.
And if it's the karmic pattern, the person may have contracted karmically with full awareness on the part of his own inner self to experience, say, a certain disease process for 20 years. That was part of the thing. And you can do all the healing you want until that period of time has elapsed, until that contract has been fulfilled. That's going
to
be it.
And from the point of view of a practitioner, you don't know when the karma is likely to end, either in time or because of a person getting in touch with his inner being and solving his problem. So from that point of view, you must assume that your therapy is valid, I guess. Give it a fair trial. And from the point of view of the afflicted, he must continuously seek treatment for the same reason. And I have a very sore head when it comes to people that give readings and label things as karmic as such, or label things as incurable, because they just don't know. It's God's game, it's not theirs, and it's, I think it's very cruel. In the ancient world, the condition that the person had was never discussed by the physician because of the power of one's imagination.
I'm glad
and
you brought that up.
I've been
feeling that was necessary to bring up, because we're in essentially a very rarefied atmosphere here. I suddenly realize we have seven guests who all agree in that reincarnation is a truth, that karma is an element in our evolution. I wonder how many of the listeners are even familiar with the terminology or the concepts. I wonder if maybe we should try and explain that a little bit, just the very basic element, because I'm sure there are people out there who have no idea of what we're talking about, or find that anything that's said is dismissible because they can't accept it.
Well, the Casey readings that were mentioned today is a beautiful example of, I mean, Edgar Casey was a man of God and raised in the Christian biblical tradition with no background in reincarnation, anyway. That was all, to him, complete heresy from where he came out in his conscious mind, and yet over a period of years he found out that he was tuning in these trance states into people's past lives, some of them going back to ancient times of the Mediterranean, others going back to way back to Egypt or to Atlantis or to the times of the very, very early prehistory of the planet. Even the very beginnings of the human species on the planet. And it surprised him when he first came into it as much as it surprised his listeners. And it was not anything that he, any kind of a program or imagery or model that he had going. It was totally opposite to any model that he had going.
I think that information is available to all of us. Masters of the spiritual path do not teach mysticism. They merely bring that knowledge which is existent. All knowledge is existent in each and every one of us. They just bring it to the fore. And in a sense, what is wrong with you, either physically or mentally, or what the karmic problem is that you have to work on, is there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's on the record.
But yeah, I think
it's what people call the Akashic Record.
Yeah,
it's recorded. Every thought, every deed, every event and consciousness is recorded, and it's available to refer to. It's like a library by those that can do it.
Now, how many of us were raised with that understanding?
I wasn't.
One thing I would say is that what I feel is that with this Akashic Record or no Akashic Record, or I don't know about reincarnation. I can't say I know It sounds like a viable theory. I don't know, though.
It feels right, too.
That's all right. But it's all right if not, too. Because I think whatever happens is, you know, it's like that fellow was talking about the holistic picture, the hologram.
Right.
That the part is valid. Every part is valid. So what's happening now is valid, whether there was reincarnation or not. And can be cured within the gestalt of that system.
That's why you know, Orthodox religions distill mystic knowledge into basic do's and don'ts. If you live within the morality of the Christian church, for example, or Judeo-Christian tradition, you're safe. You're safe karmically. And whether or not there is an afterlife or not has really nothing to do with it. And it's just as valid not to believe in it as to believe in it.
Yeah, that can go both ways. In other words, the belief in reincarnation can be taken to the extreme where it becomes a sort of a pessimistic fatalism, you know, which you sometimes find in India, for example.
Yeah, right.
I had conversations in India with people who were, and India's really carried this to an extreme, who would say, for example, well, a man has a rock on the path leading from his house to right outside his house. And he said, well, I say, why don't you move the rock? I mean, somebody might fall over it. So the man would then say, well, if it's not his karma to fall over the rock and hit his head, he won't fall over it. If it is his karma, who am I to interfere with it by removing the rock? You know, so that gives you a perfect excuse for doing nothing, which is a real problem in India. It suffers under incredible inertia. But on the other hand, there's very positive factors too, because recognizing that we live many, many lifetimes is gives you a sense of perspective and takes a lot of the pressure and personal guilt and personal involvement and blaming and that kind of thing out of particular problems. It's more the perspective of the higher self, the immortal self within, rather than the personality self of this particular incarnation.
And then taking responsibility for what you're doing, really.
Right.
And for your whole life, where you're going,
where you've come from.
This
is a part that you've chosen this time. Yes. I've chosen to come into this particular type of body, this particular kind of personality, this particular time around.
To learn
and
something.
To learn something, to carry out a certain purpose. I may get closer or not so close to that purpose, and if I blow it completely, well, I'll get another chance.
That's why the emphasis of suicide as a sin is so important, because that's the ultimate cop out. That's saying I can't
handle.
Just can't go through it, handle it, and it's spiritually very damaging.
It sets you back,
and I wonder if you're if you know the analogy of I think it's traced to some Tibetan literature of the body being likened to a horse-drawn carriage, with the horses representing the muscles and the passengers representing your desires, the carriage which is your skeleton. And they say that awareness is your sleeping coachman. As long as he is asleep, each passenger will urge as many horses as he can to go in the direction that they want, according to their desire.
Of the moment, which will change.
And the inner being that we want, I like to get either students or patients in touch with, is that sleeping horseman. And if you wake him up, the whole point is that he'll guide all the horses where, at least in one direction, one common goal. It's a very beautiful concept, and it's this inner coachman that we're, especially in the West, are really out of touch with, because as a child you're linked with it very closely, but you're conditioned very, very strongly and very consistently to ignore that particular part of your being. I mean, you come in and say, Mommy, Mommy, there's a red train, like my sister did one day. There's a red train passing through the living room, and you do that often enough, you're going to wind up seeing a child psychologist about your nutty child, or, you know, the imaginary playmates and the lights, the auras they see, are all very forcefully shut off. And certain energies, certain experiences, we no longer have a definition for them in our consciousness. So we experience a lot of things, for example, as pain that aren't pain at all. And we experience a lot of things as being rather strange that in a sense are, should be pleasurable.
What do you mean by pains that aren't pains?
A lot of the times a perception of pain in a body part is merely an interference, if you like, in the flow of energy. It's not pain at all, but it could be experienced as pain. You don't have any other basis.
Disharmony, sort of a disharmony.
Pain is like an interpretation.
It's an interpretation. For example, if a reflex point or a motor point is contacted to aggravate the pain, and then the patient is told to draw that pain, like say it's in the ankle, and to say accept it, draw it up the leg. Don't push it down anymore. That's what's causing the pain. Draw it up, accept it, pull it into you. The minute they do that, it dissipates, invariably. It wasn't pain to begin with, but we're interpreting as pain. I mean, the fibers, as far as I know, that transmit the ultimate sensual pleasure are the same that transmit pain.
Interesting. Go ahead.
So it's kind of a pressure you're talking about. Then it's a relief of pressure.
I don't feel. A lot of people I met don't feel it as pain.
Uh-huh.
And some people say have a very high pain tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
But they're closer to what I consider normal in their reactions than others. But you know, every time we fell down, scraped our knee, we ran to mommy and we had things sprayed on it, and we were taught that. I think in the society we're taught that both extremes are no good. Feeling pain or feeling too much joy are undesirable,
mm-hmm.
and we must live somewhere in the middle.
There's our agony and ecstasy.
Yes. Yeah. But it's not the balanced way of the Buddhic middle path. It's both are to be avoided. So we take pills to deny both things, and we have great discussions in this country about orgasms and things like that, because as if, you know, these semi-taboo type of things, and it's their conditioning. We have the same diseases in the East part of this world, because there's only a certain number of things you can do to a body. I mean, basically it's tubes and sacs, and you can squeeze them, you can bloat them. But the statistical frequency of the diseases are different,
mm-hmm.
because the conditioning is different and their outlook is different. You know, like cancer is not, certain organs are present in certain countries, etc. And
the thing about pain, the interpretation factor is, and for example, in the energy work that we do, very often I can be showing an energy technique, for example, to two people, and the very same method will produce in one person who is accepting the energy a beautiful, joyous, sensuous, pleasurable response, and in somebody else it'll produce pain or constriction and the feeling of go away, stop it, you know, this is too much. Or sometimes even the two sensations in the same person, either one after the other, or sometimes even at the same time in different parts of the body. The person may feel it as pleasurable as for long as it's going down through the head, then maybe it'll get down to the neck or to the thorax, and suddenly it'll be, oh, it's too much. You know?
Yeah.
And in other areas too, I remember years ago, this was most dramatic to me, because in the drug state that we used to work with LSD, this was very evident too. I worked with one person once on a research project we had, and he had taken LSD, and he was a rabbi, and he had this tremendous energy charge flowing through his body, but there was a fear thing going on it, and so he tensed up. So as he tensed up, his body started to tremble, and then he became upset about the trembling, and so the more upset he became, then the trembling got more and more violent until he was actually convulsing. His whole body was like jerking up and down in these tremendous convulsions, causing everyone else in the room to be really alarmed, saying, oh my God, he's having a convulsion, you know.
Uh-huh.
The drug has given him a convulsion. It wasn't the drug. It was his reaction to it. So I asked the other people to leave the room, and then I just sort of sat with him and held him, and I kept saying, okay, now just go into the energy. And I kept talking about water and flow, and just said, I just sort of said, keep thinking about water and letting it flow and letting it flow through you, and just think of water and imagine water and the flow and so forth. So then he just was gradually able to accept it, and you could just literally feel and see those convulsions getting less and less and less as the muscles react. There wasn't that pushing against the floor, and then finally just flowed, and it turned completely into the opposite as something that was like a totally ecstatic flow. And the same energy was still going, you know, going through his body, but the interpretation and therefore the reaction to it had changed. And you see this in, you see it all the time, really.
We're going to take a space now and bring you a commentary on the subject of tonight's program. And when we come back, we're going to be taking phone calls. And our phone number here is 864-2051. 864-2051. And we're going to try and get everyone into the studio. We'll see. We'll use a shoehorn.
Healing the whole person. What part of me needs healing? How about doing it through the use of plants? In front of me here, I have a coleus, which represents my creativity. I have a small plant, which represents my child within. The plant was about half its present size a couple months ago. Had a has a flower on it now, in fact, which it didn't have before. Actually, it had two flowers on it up till a few days ago. I managed to break one of those off. I suppose I didn't want to be twins. Another small plant I have here representing my ability to love. It seems to be growing. Another coleus representing my physical health. It's a healthy-looking plant today. And then there's my plant representing my ability to have power. Seems to have a few falling leaves and looking kind of flaky today. The idea is to take a plant and have it represent some part of you, nourish it, water it, care for it. Then you're, in fact, caring for, nourishing that part of you that needs healing, be it a part of you that's your inner self or a physical part. You don't have to be a horticulturist to do this. You just have to employ a little bit of imagination and go about using the plant world and your affinity for it to create a space for healing yourself. Healing the whole person. This is Elmer Brunsman.
Seven guests around the table, and
this is a new record for New Dimensions.
It certainly is.
I think the old one was six.
It's sort of like a birthday party somehow. It's not quite there. Hillary Anderson, James or Josh Carter, Alan Schiffman, Irving Oyle, Kim McKell, Ralph Metzner, and Khalid Al-Fakih. And we'll be taking phone calls, which have been lighting up now, so we have some people waiting. The number is 864-2051.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, is that me?
Yeah, it's you.
That's you.
I'd like to lower my radio.
By the way, we're not on delay, so it's not absolutely necessary that you lower your radio.
Hi.
Hi. My name is Jack Gaines. I give you my name because I feel so very tuned into what all of you have been saying. And I really want to thank whatever genius managed to get these particular seven people together.
Jack, I know you've been a regular listener for a long time because I've seen your name on the list for a long time.
Yes, you've been very welcome guest in my home. It's been, for me, radio at its best. And
thank
you.
I
want to acknowledge that. I really have no question. I just am enjoying hearing you so much.
It's nice to hear from you too, Jack.
It's a good start. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks for calling, Jack. Hello, you're on the air.
Alrighty. I do second what was just said about really having a good show tonight. I have one question relating to the past life regressions, the episode of the birds particularly, stimulated just a little thought. Have any studies been done relating what's been done on hypnotherapy and regression, connecting that with having someone else tune in on that person's past life in terms of correlations?
Well, that particular instance was an example of that, because that man recalled
the
past.
Ralph Metzner responding to the question.
Recalled the past life, and then in the regression that was led by Dennis Kelsey, the hypnotist, and then Joan Grant, who happened to be there,
right,
herself also tuned into that same life. So.
Okay, she was out. I'm thinking more in terms of separated or isolated readings so that the two people wouldn't be in the same room, so some other sort of control on that.
There's several studies being done through the Institute at JFK.
Good.
One of them, I think, will be presented as a PhD dissertation. It's a research project by one of the students there, and there's another independent one using two psychics and somebody doing a regression. And I think also that I've heard of another study down in Los Angeles. The gentleman's name escapes. But if you'd like to send me your name, I'd be happy to supply you, because I think that result has been published. If you'll write to John F. Kennedy, Martinez, California, 94553, and make a note that what the question was, and I'll be happy to send you that.
Okay, if you could just answer the second part of the question, also relates to the full spectrum plastic lenses that were mentioned before during the conscious news. I'm interested in where one can get those.
Josh?
Josh would be the one for that. Josh, yeah. Carter.
Yes, those are, as you heard in the news, special kind of forms of plastic lenses which allow shortwave ultraviolet light to pass through them. Conventional plexiglass lenses do let through almost the entire spectrum. The full spectrum can be let through by one manufacturer's product, which is available from some doctors through a laboratory in Southern California. And if you ask your doctor about that, he'll be able to make that connection for you.
Alrighty. If we had just another tiny bit of time, Irving?
Yeah.
Okay. Wait over there. I read some of the sonopuncture work in Earl Lane's book, and I was wondering if there were specific tones that were used, or at what note tone frequencies, or were there certain music that was more effective when beamed at certain organs?
The original work that we did was with high frequency sound. That's with a sonicator, which is a quartz crystal which vibrates at 1 million times per second, 1 megacycle. And what I did was to put that over the acupuncture points, delivering 1 million cycles per second of energy into the acupuncture points. And we got very nice results with that. The most recent experiment, which I'm doing down in Santa Cruz, we're into using a tuning fork because it's cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
And it's harder to pass a law against. And if you just put the vibrating end of a tuning fork, we've been using 128 cycles per second. We find, at least in our experience, in our experiment, we get results which are compatible with the results claimed by practitioners using needles. That's reported in the Journal of Acupuncture also.
That's a low middle C, right?
It's a C below middle C.
Okay.
128 cycles per second.
Have you done any work relating that also to color in terms of having the cycles per second going up and having other frequencies?
The Russians have been doing that. They, a professor Inyushin of Kazakh State University reported a case of osteosarcoma. This was back in 73, in which they got regression of the tumor and regrowth of normal bone after administration of energy in the laser range. They used laser lights, and I believe it was red, but I don't remember what color they used. So that's the only work I know which is using color.
I know some color therapists who have been using the C scale and an ascending tonal frequency pattern to some sort of cleansing, supposedly of the chakras.
Well, again, you're into theories, you know. I just know that if you apply nonspecific...
Well, it's empirical. Like, it definitely
right.
works.
Yeah, that's all we can say at this point, that the evidence which is accumulating today indicates that vibratory energy of various frequencies applied to the acupuncture system gives astounding clinical results, and I use the word astounding advisedly.
Right. Help me one...
We have some other callers, so thank you for...
Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling. Uh-huh. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, I'd like to talk to Irving, too. When you spoke of imagery and the deer and so forth, do you have to train the person to do that, or can you just sit down and try to do it yourself?
Can you make pictures in your head?
No, I tried it, but I just get a blank wall.
Well, you know, what I'm having people do now is maybe learn how to meditate.
You learn how to meditate.
Yeah, once you know how to meditate, the answer comes back to you. The answer, which is tied up in the symptom, can come back as a visual image or it can come back as a thought in your head. If you ask the question and then just do some simple breathing technique and simply wait for an answer as though it's coming from somebody else, an answer will pop into your head.
Yeah. Well, now, can you recommend anyone to teach me to meditate?
Can anybody answer that? Where somebody can learn how to is transcendental meditation. There's a lot of places where you can learn how to meditate. Pardon me?
There's numerous schools of meditation.
And I guess they're all of them are good. Is that it?
Well, each is possibly geared to different personalities. And if you stay with us and listen from week to week, I'm sure you'll pick up on some variety of meditation that would appeal to you and feel right to you.
You can get a book on autogenic training or maybe a little book on self-hypnosis if you want to try that yourself. Just pick up one of the self-hypnosis books.
And there's also a book available called The Spiritual Community Guide, which will let you know of a lot of resources that may be available in your area in a lot of these areas.
I see. Okay, well, I'll call Will sometime, and it's a real good program. I'm really enjoying it, and I'll let someone else talk.
Okay, thank you for calling.
Okay, bye-bye.
Good night.
Our phone number here is 864-2051. This is KQED-FM in San Francisco, 88.5. You're listening to New Dimensions, and we're exploring healing the whole person this evening. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi. I've been listening to you for about 6 months, and I usually have quite a contact high from the program, and whereas I don't expect to find basically the way to a better life. I extract all sorts of bits, and they get integrated in my life. But I've been very confused tonight. Dr. Oyl has made some interesting assertions, and I felt I could follow him, even though I felt there were some far-out things he was talking about, the nature of reality and illusion. But I have a chronic neurological syndrome, and what he was saying to me was that you can get a hold of yourself and you can do something you can control the processes in you for the better. And it was encouraging. It was very interesting, the techniques, the processes. But then these people come on and talk about karma, and I'm just absolutely puzzled, because there seems to be an element of hopelessness about karma and its effects, and that people are in the grips of something. From where it's coming, from what central switchboard, and who's directing it, I don't know, and who has followed all these lifetimes and decides on punishment and expiation and all that. But that there's no hope, that there's this element of hopelessness, and you just have to live through it.
Alan Schiffman would like to comment on that, I believe.
I think you have to look at various experiences going on. If you're involved in what's going on with your body, that may continue. The body may continue. But if you can take your attention away from that, and perhaps this is where Irving is bringing in this other thing of creating maybe a different illusion, getting involved in a form of mental play that will make you see that there is a different type of, another kind of reality, and to adjust yourself to that kind of reality, moving away from sure, this karmic thing of this on a physical plane, the body having this kind of, we'll say, congenital disorder. But if you can move yourself away from that and see that, or appreciate a different aspect of yourself.
Well, are they both operating at the same time?
Yes, they are. It's just a matter of observing these things at in different ways. If you look at the body, you see the body. If you look at the images in your mind, you see that. If you experience a quietness of the mind, you are experiencing that. It's where you identify and observe, and the more attention you place on a specific aspect of objective experience, that will increase and the others will decrease. If you think of headaches, you'll get a headache. But if you can take yourself away from the neck region and not, you know, think of it and not worry about it, you won't get the headache.
I would like to second that. In other words, I don't see karma
Ralph Metzner.
As at all a perspective of hopelessness. On the contrary, it ties in exactly to what Alan was just saying. It gives you a shift of perspective so that you get out of the thing of being locked into the perspective of saying, I've got this symptom, and my body has this symptom, and I have this pain, and see it from a larger perspective. It may not be necessary at all, and it isn't always necessary to be exactly... to become aware of what particular karmic event in a past lifetime originated it or set it into motion. That sometimes happens and sometimes it doesn't. Karma is simply a law of nature, just like action reaction in physics. It doesn't in any way detract from your free choice and from your freely chosen ability.
Isn't it a cosmic finger?
It's not a cosmic finger, it's just a pattern.
Like gravity.
And it doesn't restrict your... it's a pattern just like the law of gravity, exactly, or action-reaction.
I would like to gently suggest to you that it's altogether possible that every time you say, I have a neurologic problem, you create a neurologic problem. Don't think of it as something you're stuck with. It's possible to think of something that you create every time you say, I have a neurologic problem. It is possible for you to think about your nervous system as perfect or as healing, as actually healing if you allow it to, and then watch and see what happens.
The neurological problem, in other words, may have been what whoever diagnosed your condition had.
It's possible that there isn't anything out there.
It was Khalid that said that. He was born into an environment that acknowledged karma.
Who was that?
Al-Faqih.
Oh.
I have a very beautiful friend of mine who is a black minister, attorney, quadriplegic, homosexual psychiatrist.
So which one of those is the worst affliction?
And quite frankly, I don't feel he experiences any limitation in his life.
Experiences no suffering.
Are you suggesting that when you address yourself to your karma, you're basically shifting your focus?
Yes.
Yeah. I see. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank
Bless you
for you. Calling.
Bye.
Good night. Hello.
Hello.
New Dimensions.
Yes. I feel that the reason why people get sick is basically because they're living too much into a dream world of conditioning. And that also that every time that you try to relieve your sickness by, I don't care what means it is, that it's your ego is afraid of facing itself. and that's all I called.
If that's what you do believe to be true, that is what is true for you.
Might be, but it might be the same true for everybody else.
Maybe there isn't anybody else.
Maybe so.
You just have to consider those possibilities. That's all. We don't really know which is true. So that perhaps we can adopt the working hypothesis in this life. We adopt a working hypothesis which gives us the best kind of life. If you like to write a melodrama, then you write a melodrama.
So you think we're in San Francisco?
Yeah.
Whatever you believe to be true strongly affects what is true for you.
That might be true. And again, it might not be. There might be absolute truth. And there, you know, I feel that there is absolute truth, and that there are some truths that cannot be denied. I don't know what they are as yet.
Just so you're not suffering, that's all.
Well, I feel that even if you are suffering, it's because you yourself are, well, you're getting something.
Can you change the you to I and see how it feels?
Huh?
Can you change the you to I and see how it feels to you to say that?
Yeah.
Just say it and finish what you were saying.
I think that I, for instance, I'm blind. You know, and I feel that the reason why, you know, I was blinded, not because of reincarnation or anything of that order, but just basically because sometimes, for instance, when you're born, the wrong kind of need of your own parents to have children, they absorb some kind of energy from you, and it weakens a certain part of your body. Well, part of the body is the weakest part of the body, and then it eventually achieves its thing into its blindness, for instance, with my sake.
That would seem to put you in a totally hopeless position where everybody is doing things to you. Things are happening to you and you feel you have no control, which is a difficult state to be in. I really sympathize. But I would like you to really consider the fact that perhaps it's possible that you have more control over it than what you feel now. Just consider the possibility, that's all.
Well, I feel that it's not that I have more control over it. I feel that really, if I try to have more control of it, that's my ego trying to take a hold of it.
Do you dream?
Very little. Mm. Very little, and I dream in words, not in pictures.
Well, it may be, as you say, that your blindness was started at the birth process. A lot of things get started at the birth process.
Yeah, mine was, I was born 3 months premature.
Yeah, that may be, but nevertheless, as Irving has been arguing so strongly, it doesn't mean, no matter where it started or what started it, or if anything started it, that doesn't mean that you don't have the ability to alter it. And it might be worth your while to take a look at what is the advantage of being blind? What's the positive thing
in
that?
Well, I can give you that right in the nutshell.
Okay, give it.
The advantages of being blind? Mm-hmm. Basically, it's because I feel that I don't want sight because I've noticed in my own life, and watching and, in observing people, how they will, of course, use me and so forth. And therefore, when I do get people around me, most of the time, it's real people who really care about you. But then again, there are people, of course, that have a lot of sympathy.
Let me ask you something else. Have you found that any of your other senses,
all of them were heightened.
Have been heightened.
Yes.
So you've developed other sensitivity other than visual. So that there, you've learned a tremendous amount from being blind.
Yeah.
It's been a tremendous plus because it's enabled you to develop other kinds of sensitivities, and that is a process that can continue to the point where you might find that there is a kind of a sensitivity and a kind of perception that you can have that you probably wouldn't even have if you weren't blind.
Right. I also feel that, you know, blindness has got one other thing, too, and that is I'm not looking at the person from the outward exterior. I'm looking at him from the inside of him.
Right.
And that's what I find that's quite a bit wrong with a lot of people, is that they look from people from the outward appearance first. And that's one reason why we've got a lot of trouble.
And most people who are clairvoyant say that they do not look through their eyes when they're looking clairvoyantly.
Yeah.
They look with their eyes closed, or they may look through the back of their head.
Mm-hmm.
Like Aileen Garrett says, she could see better through the back of her head than she could through her eyes.
Yeah.
And there are researchers here in San Francisco area who are finding that people actually see tremendous amounts just through the pores of their skin, and that they can, say, arrange microcircuits, for example, without even having any eyeballs in their sockets. Well, we're seeing a lot more than we're just seeing with our eyeballs, and that vision isn't necessarily a function of retinas and corneas.
Right.
I knew a student when I was an undergraduate in Oxford, who an Indian student who was blind, and he had developed his skin vision to the point where he could ride a bicycle through traffic. He was totally blind, physically. Yet his skin vision was so sensitized that he could, through his face, pressure changes and so forth on his face, register where cars were and other bicycles, pedestrians, and the whole thing.
So there have been some experiments in Russia where they showed us some film of totally blindfolded people driving through downtown Moscow traffic, just receiving the energies on a different level. So the fact that you're not receiving a very small part of the entire possible spectrum, you know, it doesn't seem to... has slowed you up too much?
Not too much, because right. I'm living on my own by myself and I'm managing just fine.
Right.
You know, when... So you mean, I don't know if you're really blind then.
Well, well...
Your eyes are blind.
Come over here and take a look at my eyes if you wish.
Oh, they may not work very well, but that's not the point.
My eyes don't work.
Alan, you were going to say something.
Well, it's... So often when you encounter individuals who've experienced a problem with their physical body, how often, and I could see that it's very easy to do, but we fixate ourselves so much on the loss of our physical sense, whether it's vision or hearing or... It's the nature of our bodies to age and degenerate and deteriorate, and for some reason we have to. In turn, when I say we, our minds, egos, have to adjust to a situation where despite this change, we have to appreciate that we can't eke out complete happiness from our body. It's going to happen. It's going to change. We're going to have this physical shell go, and if we seek this total gratification through our sensual structure, we're going to be hurt in every direction we turn, and the truth lies in a different place. And if you can see without your eyes and hear without your ears, etc., I think this will make us feel more centered. And we get to this I, and this I will then take us to where the truth be. That's all I have to say, really.
In terms of, I just like to quote you something from the I Ching, which says that for every decrease, you must look for an equal increase. Now, that's a law of physics. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So if you have lost visual sight, it is essential that you know that you have gotten something equally in return.
Yes,
and you can fix on either aspect of it. That's up to you, which one you concentrate on.
He hasn't even lost something. He never had sight. The people that have had sight and lose it are the ones that really have problem adapting, if you like. So
I've seen it where... You know, just adding in something here, sorry to interrupt you, but I've seen it walking along the streets where sighted people, they're not even using their eyes, not even using their ears, because I use a white cane. And I will just notice, because I'll run right smack dab into them. And I can just feel these people are not using all of their awareness, and I just watch it and observe it, and I just marvel that they have sight, which is an advantage on their part, to a certain extent. It is an advantage. But they don't use even that, and they don't even use all of their senses.
Well, perhaps the sight can also be a distraction.
I think 80 or 90% of the time it's quite a bit of distraction.
The thing is, though, while we're healthy, we have to appreciate... Well, perhaps how fortunate the situation might be, but we also have to understand that the essence is not to concentrate all of our attention on these windows of perception that we feel makes us a human being, because we will be deluded as the years go by that this will not be the the place for our enjoyment in the long run.
We diluted that. It's giving us the true picture of the universe as it is.
That's very well put.
Thank you very much for helping us to see a lot of things tonight and helping a lot of the other listeners to put what we've been saying in focus.
We're going to take some more calls, and I'd like to thank our callers for being so patient. We'll get to you. Our number here is 864-2051. While we're taking a break, I want to tell our listeners that Irving Oil does have a book which has recently been published out. It's published by Celestial Arts Publishing, and it should be available in most bookstores. It's in paperback, and it's called The Healing Mind, You Can Cure Yourself Without Drugs, by Dr. Irving Oil. So I wanted to tell everybody about that. And let's move on here. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello. I have a question on heredity in relationship to reincarnation. I can't quite accept the idea of reincarnation because of the idea of heredity. I always thought that heredity was the result, or I am the result of my mother and father, which they are the result of their parents, and so forth. And it's a kind of pyramid. And that I simply felt that my genes simply mixed together in one way or another, and out I came, and I form my opinion and my judgment of the way I see the world. Reincarnation implies that an entire different being
exists.
Can simply replace my total being. Am I making any sense? I don't know.
Can you imagine this thing that's inside your head with 13 billion cells, this brain of yours, if we're going to start with a physical brain, is actually a projector, and it can project an infinite number of pictures. It can project what we call a past life, so that your consciousness is the ongoing thing. And it can do anything. You can play any kind of a picture you want. You can play a past life. You can play a current life. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, I understand that, and I can accept that, but...
If you change the television station, you know, you just get a completely different show.
Yeah, you can play a mother, father, or a past life, or...
Yeah.
In other words, if I were at one time an Arabian prince, and another time a, shoemaker, I can simply recall that character in my nature and be that person?
That all of these trips are going on at the same time. You see, if you've got a television station with an infinite number of channels, they're all broadcasting at the same time, and once you learn how to operate the receiver, you can turn on any channel you want.
That explains why a mimic can be a mimic, then. Is that what you're saying?
It just turns on it. That's how an actor does it.
It also explains why you're me.
Getting back to the heredity, what you can say is, if you're going to do the heredity thing, programmed into the DNA in every cell of your body is the experience of all of life on this planet. And you can replay it for yourself. That ties it into the heredity. Does that make sense?
I just have a difficulty. For example, if my father had a bad leg, and you take the way a person's face looks. A person is the, you can see that he has the father's eyes and the mother's nose and whatever. So you see a mixture of two different types. And I always felt that it was simply like when you make a stew or something, the stew comes out, not just the meat or the peas. You have the total of everything that has happened before you.
That goes back 3 billion years, doesn't it?
Yeah. I thought that you are the stew. So, you know, instead of a being...
Well, you are the stew, but you are also the cook. See, the stew, the physical, is given to you by the parents and by the genetic... stuff that your parents are providing you, the genetic elements, but you are also the one who is creating that, and the being within, and that being has cooked many stews before, as well as omelets and other dishes.
So you're saying the being within is the spirit, then?
Right. Mm-hmm. Call it the spirit, call it the being. So you have a history of past lives, and you also have a genetic. You have an incarnational line that you are belong to. You also have a hereditary line that you belong to, and many of the strengths, the talents, the opportunities that we have, as well as some of the problems, the difficulties, or the disease, or the hang-ups that we have, can be often traced back to one or both of those lines, which are not necessarily overlapping. Some people reincarnate over and over into the same race. You may reincarnate into your own family. You may, in fact, be a descendant of yourself, if you think about that for a moment.
So
You may have been in a past life your great-grandfather.
Well, maybe you have
some of my own grandpa.
Father Ram Dass was formerly Richard Alpert.
Richard Alpert.
I say something wrong?
No, that's all right. I was just saying he still is Richard Alpert.
Okay, right. Now, he, from what I can figure out, claims to have reincarnated in his own lifetime and is a totally different being than he was before.
Do you remember who you were when you were 10 years old? Are you the same being?
No.
Most of the time, and Lone Ranger the other half of the time.
Well, there is, one can say that.
Krishnamurti says the same thing. Krishnamurti says, reincarnate now.
Yeah, it's a play on words, but it makes sense.
Well, Jerry Rubin says the same thing.
Yeah. We have Ralph Metzner here, who knew Richard Alpert and knows Ram Dass. Are they two different people?
Well, I'll tell you my fantasy about Richard Alpert. Richard Alpert has been giving lectures in which he says the three lives of Richard Alpert. You know, the first was the Jewish Harvard professor, and then the second was the far-out psychedelic professor, and then the third was the Hindu Ram Dass, who's changed a name. But Richard Alpert, the being that he is, number one, he's an Aries, which means he's a pioneer. He changes. He keeps moving. And I can't see him staying in that Baba Ram Dass lifetime. I have this fantasy that 5 years from now, he will come back, say, the fourth life of Richard Alpert,
right.
The man who went to Venus and came back, or some other thing that we don't yet know about. So there's my particular projection on that one.
When you first made your original statement, you said I, and then immediately started talking about the body, and...
What did I originally say?
I don't remember.
Reincarnation and heredity is what I mean.
Right, yeah, but the point is that you're looking around for a vehicle to express your... to express your whatever karma or impressions you want to express. That you'll pick a body that most closely... or a life pattern that will most closely conform with what you want to express. In other words, if you must... through, say, kicking around a lot of Negro slaves in the Deep South, have to learn how it feels to be black and kicked around, you're not going to pick a upper middle class Caucasian Irish Catholic Boston parents, are you?
See, it's funny you should mention that because I once tried an experiment that way.
You did?
Yeah, I dressed in black in the summertime, very hot in New York, and I wanted to experience what it meant to be black, and I had several reasons for doing the get-up I did, and I did gain some knowledge from the experience.
See, what you're doing there is you're saying, well, we'll let the mind, we'll let the emotions be the channels, rather than, say, letting some of that divine-inspired spirit, change the channels. And we can change channels with whatever we want.
Yeah, and you can always rub the black stuff off your face when gets rough,
but
when it's a genetic pattern, that's it.
Yeah, right.
For this lifetime.
And it's been said by several psychics and people that give past life readings that many of the most militant black leaders are reincarnations of formerly militant, very prejudiced white leaders in a past century.
Yeah. You could bring it back and come up with any kind of answer.
That's usually the problem. There's no complete answer with this.
We can come up with any kind of answer.
Mentioning the spirit, and the switching of the channels, in acknowledging, if one acknowledges that there is a spirit within you, that you are God, then, of course, everything makes sense.
Doesn't it, though?
I mean, if that's what it, it's the widest possible generalization you can give yourself.
Sri Aurobindo says the universe and I came into being at the same instant.
Yeah, I'm slowly coming to this point of view myself.
Which translates loosely into you're making the whole thing up.
Yeah, which is, again, a play on words,
The question is, if you wish to continue this experience of being where you are now, and then 4 years from now you'll want to take a different role, and then another 5 years a different role, these are births and deaths of this, we'll call it... mind-body relationship. Well, the body's always changing, and now the mind is changing, then you're identifying with the changes, and then you're taking up this role and that role. And whether to say at this time, when the physical body dies, your mental body will continue
and then find another physical body. This may be true, it may not. It may be speculation. And whether it is or not, it's not that important. The point is, if you want to get off this cycle of causing living this pattern of